Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9 is celebrating World Environment Day, brought to you by Indah Water Consortium.
Good morning. You're listening to The Property Show on The Morning Run. It's our weekly take on all things property related. I'm Sim Wee Boon. Today is World Environment Day, and in conjunction with this celebration, we have someone very special here with us. Her name is Lillian Tay. She's the president of the Malaysian Institute of Architects, or you would know them as the Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia, or PAM. We'll be touching on a few topics, namely COVID-19's impact on the construction industry, what's next for the industry and architecture, as well as the environment, because it's World Environment Day. Thanks for coming on, Lillian.
Thank you, Sim.
All right, so I'm just going to get right into the most pressing issue of the day, I would say. It's COVID-19 and its impact on construction and architect industry. Maybe you can paint us a picture. How has the pandemic affected the industry?
The impact has been very, very significant. As you know, at the start, when the effects of the pandemic became apparent and the government, the newly appointed government at that time, had to already declare a nationwide movement control order, the MCO. Of course, that brought an immediate stop to construction works, which is obviously a big part of our GDP and for industry. You know, it's the heart and soul of our industry. That suspension of works would inevitably cause a lot of delay to the delivery of projects, both private public sector projects, and also attention has been focused a lot on the delivery of housing development projects. We do need to address that. Even now, only after the 4th of May were we able to proceed. Is the construction industry allowed to proceed? Earlier, everyone had to apply for permission from MITI, which allowed certain sectors, and construction industry was, and the building industry was identified as one of the key economic sectors to be allowed to apply for operating permit earlier than many other sectors. Nevertheless, even though that was allowed, the compliance to health and safety SOP, the whole process of getting the permits also was posed certain delays. So until today, I don't believe more than 20% of the construction sites are in operation, and even those in operation are not at full capacity. We are continuing to track the delay and the impact to the delivery of vacant possession for housing and for all other projects. But I think the industry is, of course, looking to the impending COVID bill, which we hope will be out later in the year, to assist to cover some of the contractual issues that would be arising.
What exactly would the COVID-19 Act address in terms of relation to the industry? How would it help the industry?
Well, in a way, I think, of course, if a COVID Act, which will set out temporary measures to allow affected parties who are unable to deliver on their contractual obligations, such as the contractor unable to deliver the completion of the works, or the developers unable to deliver the housing units to their purchasers, it will help to hopefully standardize the issues on what's a fair extension of time. But in a way, these have already been set up and within the powers of the respective act, for instance, the Housing Development Act, it has already been set up. Like many of our acts, it can never foresee such all situations, and certainly may not have foreseen a situation as we have with the COVID nationwide crisis. And there's always this clause for the minister in charge of that respective works, in this case, for instance, the Minister of Housing, to be able to make amendments, to be able to address these issues that to affect the stakeholders, particularly people who have bought housing units, condominiums and homes in this period. The period when we had the MCO was very clear-cut, when nobody was allowed to work. But this whole startup period is that quite a lot of factors, some of which are within the control and some are not within the control of the parties involved. For instance, if the contractor is unable to get his workers tested and therefore be able to proceed more quickly with his work. You know, these are the more difficult issues of delay to be addressed as to who then bears the cost of that delay. Everyone should be bearing the cost in an equitable manner, I do believe. There are probably no winners here. You know, everyone would have to bear with the cost of losing. But the important thing is to get that over with quickly. And that's, I think, the urgent need for this bill, such that we can move on to the whole recovery process. Because if we didn't, that is that would certainly amount to much larger problems.
But the industry itself, construction, property in general, you know, even architecture, even before the pandemic came, it was already feeling the brunt of an oversupply, a supply and demand issue. People were rethinking their approach towards buying properties. Will we most likely see less projects being kickstarted? Will we see possibly property players closing shops? Will we see architectural firms laying off their people? Because it's very hard to foresee more buildings being built after this.
Well, indeed, there was oversupply of many types of residential products before preceding the MCO, clearly. But on the other hand, also, we had not yet dealt with being able to make housing more affordable. So there is still a need for a lot of people to still own their first homes. So it's just that perhaps the market was skewed. Everyone was focused on a sector that perhaps seems more attractive, more profitable, and we really do need to refocus and rethink the need to put more energy and effort back into making affordable housing that is well supported by public infrastructure, that are in good locations, near to schools, near to places of work, not just meeting KPI numbers set up, for the year, or, if we needed to produce how many units. So we need to rethink to be more effective, I think. There's still a sector that is in need. Of course, we expect as companies struggle, a lot of people will lose their jobs. They may also be hesitant to take on, to buy a home or buy that home that they wanted or upgrade the home that they wanted. So, of course, that will slow the industry down and slow demand. That is the recovery process. I think that's why the importance to ensure that businesses can go on so that jobs can be retained, because that's the only way to be able to retain jobs and have people to be able to buy, to consume and buy again. So the need to sustain our companies are very important. Same with architect firms. I think a lot have been affected because of the suspension of works. Nobody could do anything. Even though they can work from home, we realize that many, many companies are not able to achieve full capacity. You're probably working at 40 to 50, 60% capacity or productivity. Again, we look to the COVID bill to set up fair ways for employers to deal with these issues of retaining staff, to be able to, especially over this interim recovery period, and practicable measures that can be set out. Because currently, of course, labor laws are quite strict. You have to pay all your employees and there are a lot of restrictions on leave. So some sort of interim temporary measures to deal with these issues are needed to help firms to be able to survive. A lot of them are suffering cash flow issues and may need to close down. So we've also appealed to the government for architects to have, for instance, fees that were due before, for work done before the MCO to be released. A lot of fees are owing to our small companies, small and large companies. We did a survey and, for instance, over 80% of our companies are owed fees and amounting anything from 2 months to 9 months of salary. So you can imagine how strapped they are in terms of cash flow to be able to just open office back again and pay their staff. So we are still looking for, we have not been able to enjoy as much some of the wage subsidies because at the level of professional services, the wage subsidies were really targeted for jobs below 4,000, for instance. So many professional service companies not able to benefit from those. So we hope still that there will be more measures coming in the budget, forthcoming budget for next year or even for this year to reduce taxes, to ease cash flow, and especially also subsidies or incentives for expenses incurred to upgrade IT infrastructure, because we don't know whether this health and safety precautions would be extended for a further few months until the whole pandemic really is cleared. So this to increase people's ability to work from home and to have high productivity, the cost to upgrade infrastructure. You know, for instance, architects, we are very particular. We use specialist design software, all imported from America and from Germany, and it's very hard. It's very expensive. It costs over 20,000 ringgit to equip each person with a laptop and the legal license software. You know, with the subscriptions and then the cost of upgrading all your cloud-based platforms. It is quite costly. So some of these costs will be very hard to put in at this time when they are already very, very cash-strapped and have already depleted their reserves. You know, most companies will have reserves of perhaps 2 months or even three. But these cash flow issues will continue to put a lot of pressure on all companies, whether small, medium, or large.
Okay, and we're going to take a little break right now for some messages. Stay tuned, BFM
89.9. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. You're tuned into The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon. And with me here today is Lilian Tay, President of the Malaysian Institute of Architects, or Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia, better known as PAM. So earlier, we've been talking about the impact of COVID-19 on the industry, what needs to be done, the COVID-19 Act, how we can help, the various issues touching on what's going through the construction and architect industry right now. So now we're going to jump into what today is about, which is World Environment Day. I want to start off with the topic of green buildings. You know, are green buildings popular in Malaysia?
As you know, PAM, Malaysian Institute of Architects, together with the Association of Consulting Engineers, had way back in the year 2009 set up the first green building certification system called the GBI, the Green Building Index. That's 11 years ago, and it has certainly, through these 11 years, done a lot to improve the whole sustainability in our buildings in Malaysia. For instance, in these last 10, 11 years, a total of almost close to 250 million square foot of buildings had been certified green on our GBI rating system. A good part of them has been built, and that really is equivalent to about removing 250,000 cars off the roads. That's the extent of carbon reduction that had been achieved in the last 10 years. We're really one of the earliest in the region to do this. I do hope that that this momentum will continue and this whole push for climate action and climate change, which is the ultimate objective here for green buildings, will continue and will be even further boosted by the lessons we have learned from this pandemic, where we not only see the benefits of having a more sustainable environment in terms of our homes and workplace and our shopping malls and, you know, places of recreation, how we can make them more green and less reliant on being closed up and being air-conditioned. So I do hope that with this realization, that there will be a lot more interest and a lot more recognition of the benefits of adopting greater sustainable design in all our built environment.
Okay, but some of the feedback that I've heard of about adhering to the GBI is an inefficient supply of green products because conventional built materials will be cheaper and easier to get, and also a perceived lack of technical understanding when dealing with green buildings that might push away smaller players that want to get in on this. I mean, is there anything being done to bridge the gap? What's PAM doing to help encourage the use of GBI, the adherence to that?
Well, I think in the early days, when the products, for instance, sanitary fittings, light fittings, solar panels, these were relatively looked at as higher cost items. But now with the increase in production of these, the price differential has become very, very minimal, if any, at all. And in fact, there are many, many more products. And so with you know, increased competition, the price of these products have gone down. So it has really been cheaper to go green in terms of immediate costs. The long-term savings has always been there from day one. In fact, if we have done now, after 10 years, we have all the data to show what's the cost, you know, to certify your building, to make the specifications less energy consuming. It may only amount to anything from 2% to 7%. You know, we don't need all to be platinum rated, but a good amount of sustainable measures in the building. It's not going to cost you more than 2 to 3% in the actual building costs. But of course, what's needed, which we had in the early days, is also incentives from the government. And we keep asking for those incentives to be retained and perhaps even further increased to incentivize people to get their buildings certified green. It is important to certify because it's a quantifiable process. You know, if you just do based on intuitive, you know, you may not actually be achieving the reduction, the quantitative reduction that's needed cumulatively from everyone, from, you know, as many developments as possible to achieve the impact to mitigate these climate change issues that are obviously hitting us. I do think that, I mean, in Malaysia now, there are several of these green rating systems that can be used, the GBI from PAM and ACM. Then there is also, RADAR has also the Green RE or Green RE that is sort of patterned mostly after the Singapore Green Mark. And, you know, CIDB has their own MyCrest. So there are various options. I think the need is commitment, and I hope that this the experience of this incident will further make people see the importance of achieving higher sustainability. And this not just in building systems, I think just in overall urban planning, the need for green parks, smaller pocket parks that are accessible, such that you know, you are not needing to expend energy and, you know, and put carbon dioxide in the air to go for a walk in a big park if they're too centralized. So these things are also covered. It's not just the green rating. It's not just for buildings. It's also for neighborhood planning, planning of new townships, for instance. It covers how you plan your open spaces as well.
I'm curious to know that where Malaysia stacks in the world class of sustainable building, of green building?
Well, I think certainly our GBI is a rating system that is recognized by the World Green Building Council. So it is a system that is well of global standards, of international global standards. It's certainly a very good rating system. So any buildings that are certified, have gone through the whole process, would be performing at very, very good international levels of sustainability. I mean, as mentioned, there have been almost a quarter, 250 million square foot of spaces, new spaces done. And I do believe that they are of top international quality. I think the task ahead is really to have more commitment and to make it more accessible, you know, that people don't think of it as just installing expensive, you know, low energy, very advanced systems, but that there are a lot of measures that are recognized as sustainable measures, you know, providing balconies, providing plots, you know, in for urban farming, things like that. Those are very, as you said, you know, traditional things. You know, if you had that little courtyard that you remember from your childhood days, you know, in every terrace house there is, you could be, you know, planting your herbs, your little tomatoes and chilies, and having a very good outdoor environment within your own home that is you know, naturally ventilated. You don't need to turn on the air condition. Even in offices today now, there's a lot of rethinking as how to manage these big corporate offices as people start to work from home, or if they had to be in office, they have sometimes to, in these in health crisis situations, need to adhere to distancing. But importantly, the ventilation, you know, even if you had the socially distance, if I don't know about the COVID virus, but any future virus that could be airborne, the whole notion of air conditioning would be questioned as to whether you're recirculating the same air. I mean, it's not just about physical distancing, how to ensure that the air that's being shared and recirculated is able to also cater to the health risks at that time. For instance, you know, how to increase the amount of fresh air content in recirculated air for air conditioning. A lot of things need to be looked at.
Would government policy help? Because I don't think I'm familiar with a very specific government policy that pushes for more green building.
That's a very good question, Sim. I think we did see, for instance, in City Hall, they were in Kuala Lumpur and also in Penang, they do encourage green developments by giving them incentives. They may be able to build a little bit more on that site if they're green building. And I think these should be pursued even further. More incentives should be given. In Singapore, for instance, it is actually mandatory for buildings above a certain size to be green rated. It's not an option. It's mandatory. And I think something like that would benefit the whole green and climate action agenda. It's not mandatory, but I would think it would be quite good if, for instance, buildings above a certain size and the scale of such developments should be able to afford that small 2-3% extra front expense to invest in a green building. So it is up to local authorities, I think, to impose greater requirements for green in the long-term interest, you know, of everyone.
Okay, and that's all the time we have for today's Property Show. Thank you for being on the show, Lilian. That was Lilian Tay, President of the Malaysian Institute of Architects, Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia, or better known as PAM. We've got the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9.
This World Environment Day special was brought to you by Indah Water Consortium, New Life for Water.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.